Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock, your host, with you on this Thursday afternoon edition, or Friday morning if you're still a morning listener. I know a lot of you aren't even commuting right now, so take a jog. I think that's been my favorite thing to do, to listen to podcasts recently. Got to get out of the house a little bit and still avoid people. If you're fast enough, you can still not get within 20 feet of somebody if you're quick on the streets. But however you listen to podcasts usually or these days, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we're together, and we're going to finish the week off here with a Thursday afternoon pod. We've got some more 49ers news to get into. I've got an excerpt from a conversation I had with Evan Sidery. He's the host of Locked On Colts. We've talked a lot about the 49ers Buckner trade. I do have a segment of that later. If you want to go hear our full conversation, you can go find his podcast at Locked On Colts. But I didn't want to take up the whole podcast today because I do want to hit some questions, and I know there's a lot of questions now that we've seen things start to settle a little bit after the first few days of free agency. And I think it's pretty clear all of the big movement is done for the 49ers, but there still are some things to do, I think, for the Niners as they get ready for the draft on the free agent market. But it's definitely going to be second-tier free agents from here on out, as it was Thursday, adding and subtracting offensive linemen for the 49ers. By the way, you can always hit me up on Twitter at BDPeacock. Email LockedOn49ers at Gmail. I'm going to try to get to some listener questions just about every day leading up to the draft. So tweets are the best way. They're much shorter, but you can also email. No problem there, and we'll hit a bunch of those in segment number two today. I've got a backup of some emails and some good ones that I want to get to on today's program. But let's start with the news. Where do the 49ers stand right now after 2 days of the official new league year and free agency being open and the few days of tampering before that? Well, the 49ers are going to have a different starting offensive line for the first time in like 2 years, right? They've had the same starting five. I thought they're going to go into 2020 with the same starting group once again, but no, Mike Person will no longer be the starting right guard in San Francisco. He has been released. In his place, the 49ers have signed former Jets guard Tom Compton to a one-year, $3 million contract, according to Compton's agent, I think is where that number comes from. I don't know if I trust that number fully. Maybe there is some talk on Twitter that maybe it's with some incentives or something, because that's a half mil more than what Mike Person was already getting, and Tom Compton hasn't been playing at a level that's better than Mike Person. He's a few years younger, but he's still 30 years old, and $3 million, they just released a guy who's making $2.5 million in Mike Person, who's been a pretty good player, and I understand the 49ers want to upgrade that. I don't think Compton is, so I have a feeling that's a much lower number, and then maybe some incentives if he does end up starting some games, and he has starting experience. He started five games last year for the Jets, the year before that, and I mean, he's been around the block. Compton was drafted in the sixth round out of South Dakota in 2012, bounced from Washington, where he was drafted, finished out his rookie contract there. Then he ended up in Atlanta, then Chicago for a year, then Minnesota, where he started 14 games in 2018, then started five games last year with the Jets. So he's been around the block. PFF grades don't love him either as a pass blocker or a run blocker, but he's, you know, a base level offensive lineman for the 49ers. So they know they have somebody who started games in the NFL. He was athletic coming out of school, so seems like he'd be a fit for that zone scheme for Kyle Shanahan's 49ers offense, but I don't think this is the player that they envisioned starting at right guard. I think that player is either Daniel Brunskill or he's not on the roster. And I have some feelings about that. And in the draft, maybe where the 49ers could go, they could go a few ways. Offensive tackle, center, guard, interior offensive line, maybe a combination of both of those or all three of those. A lot of ways they could go in the draft, and we'll definitely get into a lot of that. We'll do a mock draft Monday after the weekend. We'll hit the rest of the news that happens, you know, late Thursday night and Friday and through the weekend. We'll tackle all that Monday and then get into some mock drafts, because as things settle, and I know there's going to be mock drafts all around the internet after free agency that are going to look a lot different. So we'll examine how things have changed, especially for the 49ers, who guess what, have a number 13 pick in the first round now, an extra first round pick, which changes a lot. And it's going to make draft season for the next month a lot more fun for us. And post-draft, breaking all these prospects down, I mean, that is a lot of draft capital to have the number 13 pick, whether that's a stud player the 49ers could trade. It makes it probably easier for them to trade 31 because they know that they are going to have a stud at 13, or they can trade 13 knowing they still have another first round pick. They could go up if they wanted to. They had unlimited options for the 49ers. I still think they would go down before they would go up, but you never know. The 49ers have been somewhat unpredictable when it comes to the draft. So all of that we'll get into mock draft Monday next week. But today, let's go over what's happened so far this week, the first week of free agency. The 49ers re-signed Arik Armstead, $17 million a year. They traded away DeForest Buckner, got a first-round pick back from the Indianapolis Colts, who gave him $21 million per year. The only other player the 49ers have lost so far is, aside from cutting Mike Person, is backup tight end Levine Toilolo. I think tight end is another sneaky need for the 49ers, and apparently they did kick the tires early in free agency on Austin Hooper, which surprises the heck out of me. Kyle Shanahan, does he want to go more two tight end sets? You already have one of the best, you have the best tight end in the NFL. That would surprise me. The 49ers would want to spend a bunch of money there. But they haven't really talked, and it seems like Emmanuel Sanders is out, and he's not coming back. He's changed his avatar on Twitter, which people love to look into. I don't look too much into that, but just judging by what he said on Twitter, that the 49ers haven't even reached out to him right before free agency started, that seems like that's not happening, and that Emmanuel Sanders is not coming back. The 49ers have held on to some, obviously Jimmy Ward, a big deal, $8 million, $8 plus million per year over a three-year contract. They brought back Sean Coleman, Ronald Blair, Ben Garland, all on one-year contracts, and then restricted free agents, wide receiver Kendrick Bourne and running back Matt Breida, were tendered at a second-round level. So a team could still sign those players, but they would have to give the 49ers a second-round pick, and nobody's going to do that. I would be very shocked if a team did that, and they would be welcome to if they wanted to sign one of those players at that level. So that pretty much locks the 49ers into those players at about $3.3 million, I think, each for the 2020 season. Some news around the league really quickly, just breaking here as I'm recording this, is that New Orleans Saints head coach, according to Adam Schefter, Sean Payton has tested positive for coronavirus. He told ESPN Thursday, Payton is the first person in the NFL known to test positive for the virus. So coronavirus has officially hit the NFL, and man, that passed very quickly around the NBA, which I think they were right to shut that thing down very quickly and not have any more NBA games and spread that further within the NBA. And obviously, people are already quarantined, so I don't know how, where anybody else works with the Saints are testing positive for that, but I'm sure everyone in New Orleans is a little bit more on alert, and a lot of folks around the Saints will probably get tested now to make sure that's not spreading around the building for those that might have been in and out, even after some of this quarantining and self-quarantining and social distancing has started. Big news in the NFC West, the Rams are headed toward some type of cap hell, I think, that we haven't seen in a while. Teams had really figured this thing out, and the Rams made some odd moves recently, paying a bunch of guys, then trading a lot of their draft capital that they could use to find cheap talent to trade for Jalen Ramsey. Now they still have to pay him a big deal. They're going to take a $20 million cap hit to release Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley, it was rumored, would be potentially traded. The Rams just had to cut him because they were up against it. They were about to pay him a roster bonus, and additional bonus plus other contract stuff would have cost them $10.5 million if they didn't do something now. So they had to cut Todd Gurley. They're shopping Brandon Cooks, who's similarly bad contract. And just the answer is no for those of you before you even ask about the 49ers and any of those players. Clay Matthews also getting released from the Rams. Really bad management, I think, by the Rams. I don't know what they were doing with all of those contracts and now don't have a bunch of picks to make up for those losses and fill the rest of their roster with cheap talent. Just odd by Les Snead and the Rams. Some things definitely went south with how they planned and how good they thought they were going to be last year with Jalen Ramsey. I think they thought they were still going to make a run. And the NFC West is tough, man. It's going to be hard for them to make a run next year, too. All right, let's get into some of these Twitter and email questions, and then we'll talk with Evan from Locked On Colts about Buckner and the 49ers and pick 13, and potentially if maybe the Colts and 49ers, since they've already been talking quite a bit, maybe there's something else. Maybe they can dance again on draft day. It's funny, I'm already starting to see some tweets about Todd Gurley and the 49ers potentially, and I have no doubt, I mean, Kyle Shanahan loves running backs, so he's thinking about it. It might be like the Tom Brady thing where it's like, oh, wait a second, and they think about it, and we can't spend more money. I mean, the 49ers spent more money on running backs, counting fullbacks in their entire running back room, more money on running backs last year than any team in the league. It's crazy. And the 49ers, they restructured Jerick McKinnon's deal, but from what I've seen, I think it's $2.91 million is the new cap number, and it's basically a veteran salary plus incentives, but then the restructure moved some bonus money around. So the cap number is 2.91 from what I saw. Then you have Breida, who got a raise. He's 3.3 million. The 49ers are still up at the top of the league. You have 10 million combined between Coleman and Kyle Juszczyk. I'm not looking at it right now, so offhand, I can't remember how much. Jeff Wilson's obviously very cheap, but Raheem Mostert makes at least $2 million from a deal he got a couple of years ago. So, I mean, it's still cheap, but you start putting all this money together and the 49ers could easily be paying one of the top running backs in the league with how much money they're paying their group total. Chris from London via email, he says, love the show. Sadly, have listened to it at home rather than on my way to work on the tube now. Oh yeah, I remember Chris from the tube in London. Shout out to everybody who listens to the pod on their tube, wherever they are. There are some tubes here in the States that we don't call it the tube, but it's definitely a tube. He says, hope your family is doing well. Thank you very much. Same to you, Chris. I hope everybody's family out there is doing well in these times. He goes on to say, there's been a lot of dispute on Twitter regarding the trade to the Colts. My question for you is, did no one lose this trade? As sad as the trade was, we kept Buckner on his rookie contract, got multiple successful dominant seasons out of him, received a first-round pick, have enough room to sign Armstead, Ward, etc. To the Colts, they got a dominating playmaker in there on their side, and they're on the up. And he says for Defoe, obviously, Defoe's a big winner in this because he got paid. What are your thoughts? Love the show. Keep up the hard work in these dark times. Yes, thank you very much, Chris, for the question. I agree. I think it's a win-win-win. As long as Defoe's cool with living in Indianapolis and his family likes it there, he got paid $21 million per year. He's doing great. Armstead got his money. The 49ers got some flexibility under the cap. They got that shiny first-round draft pick at number 13 overall, top half of the first round, which is very key in all of this. So it's a win for the 49ers because the Colts came strong with that, you know, and the Colts wanted that player, obviously, so it's a win for them. And I agree, this is one of those win-win, and when you consider Defoe winning, absolutely, he wins too. So for those fans that bought Buckner jerseys and really loved DeForest Buckner, and I totally understand that, and it's tough to see a really good player go, and I think it was a shock for a lot of people because this isn't something that was talked about or rumored really up to the signing, except for the one person on Twitter that told me that this was going to happen a week before it happened, and I didn't listen to him. So it's a good trade. I think it's a good trade for all sides, and we talk a little bit about that. You'll hear it in the final segment here with Evan from Locked On Colts. And if you want to hear that whole podcast, go check out the full episode on Locked On Colts from, I believe it went up Wednesday. An email from Barnaby. He says, what a whirlwind Monday was, huh? I thought the trade of Buckner was an April Fool's joke at first. Had to triple check the date. I will miss Buckner. He was a model player for this franchise. I'm sorry to see him go, but I wish him the best in Indy. Yeah, that's pretty much the common sentiment right now. Sad to see him go, but happy for him. And the 49ers got a nice return, and they got that cap flexibility. So the whole deal makes a lot of sense for everybody. Definitely wish Defoe the best. Barnaby goes on to say, I was excited to hear that we got an early first-round pick. I was thinking about wide receiver, cornerback, free safety, defensive tackle, but then it occurred to me that offensive tackle will probably be their play. I am almost sure of it. Which OT do you think would be the best fit for our offensive scheme? Thank you, Barnaby. I'm glad you brought up this question because the more I think about it, the more offensive tackle does start to make some sense. And the 49ers do have a lot of offensive linemen right now. They added Compton. You already have School, Brunskill. You have your starting four from last year beyond that. So there's some players, and there's going to be some competition for some spots there. Shawn Coleman was re-signed on a one-year deal with Ben Garland. So some bodies, but I think any of those players on the one-year deals could be gone. You know, they're going to have to fight and earn their spots. They're obviously not highly paid player, no guaranteed contracts, and not multi-year deals. And I think the 49ers are setting themselves up to go offensive tackle if they want, but they don't have to. They don't have to do anything necessarily early in the draft, but it's wide open and they absolutely could, and it could start at pick 13. I think you're right. And to answer the question, I would still put wide receiver just over offensive tackle right now as things stand, and cornerback would be next. Obviously, safety's probably out now that they had re-signed Jimmy Ward, but late in the draft, you just draft the best players and draft some depth and draft some guys who can play some special teams, maybe win a spot at any of those positions. Defensive tackle should definitely be looked into as edge, because I don't know how long D Ford's knee is going to hold up. He played a part-time role last year. He's very expensive. Could be the last year for him. If he's banged up and missing time again this year, you still need a guy to come off the edge. Ronald Blair back on a one-year contract, but you don't know how he's going to look after his injury. So I would put edge just almost on par with defensive tackle, because Eric Armstead can play inside too, and you're looking at nickel packages. Armstead's inside. And a lot of what the draft is going to be about, aside from wide receiver, which is a now and future need, I think, still for the 49ers, cornerback, they've got three or four free agents next year at the cornerback position. Offensive tackle, Joe Staley, this could be his last year. Edge, you could be missing D Ford eventually. You need that speed pass rusher on the outside. So a lot of this draft could be looking forward, getting somebody developed so they're ready to start and be depth this year. Could still start and compete for a starting job in 2020, but they would be ready to go for 2021, and that development curve would have already been going. And it would have been nice if they could have done that at wide receiver so they didn't have to go out and trade for somebody last year. And that's why you don't want to have to count on a rookie, because they might not be ready to go in week one. And even with Deebo Samuel, he eventually was ready to play and played at a high level at the end of the year, but the other guys didn't develop and the other guys weren't ready to play, and there were some guys injured, and so they had to go make a trade. And you would rather be a year ahead of that curve than struggling to find players immediately and needing to draft a guy in the first round, in the second round, that has to immediately come in and be a starter. It's a lot of pressure on a rookie, and rookies aren't always ready to go in year one. They rarely are, actually. To answer your question, which offensive tackle do you think would be the best fit in our offensive scheme? The guy that I keep coming back to right now, and you might see his name in that number 13 spot. A little spoiler here for the mock draft Monday. I'm going to do my own mock and then look at the Draft Network's mock. Maybe we'll compare those on Monday. Out of Alabama, Jedrick Wills Jr. is the one that's standing out to me. And who knows, he might not be available at 13. There's four elite level offensive tackles in this class. I'd be fine with any of them for the 49ers. That's why I love being at pick 13 for the 49ers. There's a few wide receivers. There's a couple of defensive tackles. There's some stud players that I absolutely do not think they will have any opportunity at all to get at 13. But if one of those guys fall, Chase Young, Jeffrey Okuda, Isaiah Simmons, I mean, you just draft them. I don't think one of the tackles, Mekhi Becton, the biggest of the group, 6'7 and 3'8", 364 pounds. He moved really well and worked out well at his size. I just still don't think, even though he's athletic for his size, I don't think he exactly fits what Kyle Shanahan likes. And there's a reason that Kyle Shanahan went out and got Mike McGlinchey and traded away Trent Brown. And Mekhi Becton is Trent Brown's size. Moves a lot better than Trent Brown, so he could actually work for the 49ers. But still, I just don't think he's the ideal type. He's not Kyle Shanahan's prototype at tackle. I think the other three fit a lot better for what Kyle Shanahan likes. And I think the two that fit the best for what the 49ers need this year would be Jedrick Wills out of Alabama and Tristan Wirfs. Andrew Thomas, a great tackle too, but I like Andrew Thomas less as a potential guard in year one. And that's the key why I like Wirfs and Wills better for the 49ers in their current position. And I would be fine with all four of them. They're all great prospects at offensive tackle, easily worth the 13th overall pick. And some of them are going to be gone and before the 49ers pick. They're not going to have their choice of all these tackles or wide receivers. But Wirfs, I mean, he's a workout warrior, 6'5", 320 pounds. He ran a what did he run? He ran something stupid at the combine. Let me find his exact number. I want to be accurate here with what he threw down. Was it 4.8, 4.7, I think, at 320 pounds, 6'5". Here we go. Here are the numbers. Yeah, 4.85, which is a crazy fast 40 time. I mean, that's Joe Staley put up, I think Joe Staley ran 4.79 or something really stupid, but Joe Staley was 20 pounds lighter at the combine. He was like right at 300 pounds, right? So That's exactly what the 49ers want. Someone that has movement skills, someone that can get out on the second level. He's athletic enough to be a pass blocker against speed rushers. He's very strong too, so he can plow guys in the run game. But I think if they drafted a tackle this year, it'd be the perfect scenario that player could develop in year one, be ready to bump out to tackle if this is indeed Joe Staley's last year with the 49ers, and you would have a massive upgrade at guard in year one. Some people think Wirfs should play guard, period, anyway, and not even play tackle, which is why coming into this, I think he was kind of my fourth tackle, but he's really athletic. He's a great fit. He would be a perfect fit at guard for a while, bump out to tackle when Joe Staley's gone, then you have your bookends at tackle. So that's the fit, I think, for the 49ers with the draft. If they went offensive tackle, it's Wirfs, and then the guy I like even better is Jedrick Wills, because I think Wills is just more technically sound and a better pass blocker. But again, 6'4", 312 pounds, really athletic, 5.05 40 time, just so calm. I love the way he pass blocks. They have the requisite 34-inch arm length, right? So size is not a problem. But Wills gets better movement than Wirfs, even though he's not the athletic freak as far as workouts go. I think he's a better football player. Wills gets movement in the run game, has all the athleticism you need to get out in the second level and pull and do all the things you would have to do in the 49ers offense in that outside zone and get on the move and hit moving targets and get to the second level. And he's a better pass blocker. He's just so calm and so technically sound. And he played right tackle because Tua was a lefty, his quarterback, which is, I think, why Wills was playing right tackle anyway. So it's not really a knock, but that'd be nice. You play right guard and then you just move over to right tackle. Mike McGlinchey goes and replaces Joe Staley at left tackle in a year or two, whenever that happens, and you have upgrades all around. I love that fit and that idea for the 49ers at 13. If they go that route and go offensive tackle, my number one would be Jedrick Wills for the Niners. Where are we at on time? Okay, we've got to get to this crossover segment with Evan Sidery of Locked On Colts. Next, keep those mailbag questions coming. You're going to try to hit some every episode leading up to the draft at BD Peacock on Twitter, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. Oh, and just a reminder, since a lot of you are listening to your podcast differently than you might have normal days, normal weeks on your commute or whatever, don't forget you can ask your Alexa, your Google Home device to play podcast Locked On 49ers.
Brian, from the 49ers perspective here, what do you think they end up doing here with that draft pick? Is they now have two in the first round, 13 and 31. Do they go out and get a Javon Kinlaw or Derek Brown 13 just to plug and play for a rookie contract of 5 years on the cheap to replace DeForest Buckner? Or do you think they're maybe open the trading down and maybe stockpiling more draft picks that are kind of depleted up right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm diving more into those top 15 prospects in this draft because I didn't think that those players that you mentioned, Kinlaw and Derek Brown and the top three wide receivers in this class and those offensive tackles, I could see the 49ers going in any of those directions with the 13th pick. And now I've got to really pick those prospects apart and see how I feel about them and how I would rank them for the 49ers. I think if the draft were held today, I would lean toward Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Henry Ruggs, one of those wide receivers for the 49ers, because they still haven't brought back Emmanuel Sanders at wide receiver. But an interesting thing that you brought up, and I think this is where it makes so much sense for a team that's going to need depth, that's going to be up against the cap for a while, that's a really good team that wants to build this for a long time, is they could potentially turn this one draft pick and DeForest Buckner into more picks and maybe picks in the future. So I think they'll absolutely be open to listening to offers. If, say, a quarterback starts to slip and another team wants to come up and draft a quarterback at 13, they should be listening to those type of offers, and they can really go in any direction now with those two picks in the first round. And moving down from either 13 or 31 makes a lot of sense because they don't have a pick all the way until the fifth round after the 31st overall selection. And by the way, when it comes to the Colts, I was doing a mock draft yesterday after the dust sort of settled, and I think the 49ers are pretty well done when it comes to free agency until that second wave hits and they get some bargain free agents potentially, and maybe at the defensive tackle position. But with the Colts, and they have those two second round picks, I'm not so sure the Colts aren't going to actually be selecting still in round one. And who knows, maybe the 49ers and Colts had some conversations and the Colts could potentially move up with, say, pick 44 and their third round selection, get back into the first round at the 49ers 31 spot and maybe do something that they still want to do at the end of round one and still keep pick 34.
That's exactly what I thought, Brian. I'm glad you brought that up, honestly, because we've been pounding the table here on this podcast is about the Colts really addressing quarterback early. And a guy like, with how the dominoes are falling now, who would have thought, Brian, Tampa Bay is getting Tom Brady all of a sudden, and then that's going to take them off the quarterback market, I imagine, at 14. The Raiders sticking with Derek Carr there. The Panthers going Teddy Bridgewater. the Chargers, who knows what happens there at six, they could still go Justin Herbert, or maybe they stick a Tyrod Taylor there. It makes you think maybe a guy like Jordan Love or Justin Herbert slips down the board here. Maybe a guy like Jordan Love is available at 31 for them, and maybe they already know they could probably get him in that late first, get that fifth-year option trade back up for him, like you mentioned. Like a 44 for 75 for 31 does make an awful lot of sense if that scenario does play out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the exact trade I was looking at when I was doing a mock draft, and I was thinking, man, that makes a lot of sense. Whether it's quarterback Jordan Love falling, maybe one of the wide receivers, say that the Colts liked at 13, they want to get into the next tier of wide receivers, but they could maybe get the similar player at 34, or maybe there's two guys that they want to get at 31 and 34, or even, you know, if they wanted to go up way ahead of where the 49ers are, if you have pick 34, you're just outside of the first round. The Colts could really get up, not as high as they want, but they could get up into the late teens or 20s fairly easily with the draft capital they have. So it's a great place for the Colts to be. And when you still have that much draft capital, you could still be mobile on draft day, and you could still trade a first rounder to get the type of player and human being that they got in DeForest Buckner. I think it's a good trade and really a win-win, because I talked about how it was a win for the 49ers just because they didn't have to pay $21 million for a defensive tackle, and they got a pick in the top half and a premium first round pick for it. That doesn't mean it's not also a win for the Colts.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think it's a win-win the more I've thought about it, because the price at first I thought was pretty hefty for DeForest Buckner, but diving in more to his tape and just hearing the kind of person he is in the locker room, Chris Beyer cares so much about character. It seems like DeForest Buckner is going to come in straight away and be an impact guy, not only in the locker room, but on the field as well. But I have a few more questions for you, Brian, before I let you go. And just from an outsider's perspective here, what's been your opinion of what the Colts been doing so far? You get DeForest Buckner, like you mentioned, on a trade, number 13 overall. You go out and sign Philip Rivers to replace Jacoby Brissett on a one-year, $25 million deal. Are the Colts, it seems to me like they're going for it this year, Brian. Like, they're going to try to push the chips in a little bit. They've used a lot of their money. Chris Bowd really usually never does this, going out and get not only Buckner paying big money, but Philip Rivers for $25 million for 1 year. Maybe they're trying to get Rivers that ring, but also get the Colts that ring. So what's your thoughts from an outsider's point of view here? What's going on here?
Yeah, it's a couple of things. And first, that's what really made me think about the Colts potentially moving back up into the first round on draft day, because it seems like they're going for it. And if you go bring in a veteran quarterback like Philip Rivers, it tells me two things. You're going for it now, and you believe that he makes a clear difference over the guy you already had at quarterback in Jacoby Brissett. And so going and getting maybe the future quarterback there, it would seem to me that Jacoby Brissett is the obvious big loser here. And who knows, maybe they're able to work out a deal and send him back to New England, where he came from, because the Patriots still need to figure some things out at quarterback now. But I like what the Colts are doing. I liked the Colts last year. I thought they were slightly disappointing. I expected more from them, and I feel like they felt the same, which is why you're seeing them be really proactive, going out and getting a quarterback, going out and trading for a stud defensive player to make sure they get over the top and make sure they're not feeling like they left anything on the table in 2020 like they did in 2019. So I like the direction for the Colts. I think they have a lot going for them and a lot of talent on the team. Maybe a couple pieces, future quarterback, maybe a wide receiver to help out Philip Rivers, which Jacoby Brissett will be saying to himself, well, where were these extra pieces for me last year? That would have helped me as well. So, but I do like the way Chris Ballard, and I like the direction of the Colts right now for sure.
What do you think the upside is? Just closing a little bit on Buckner here, Brian. You throw him in now, presumably as the three technique to this Colts defense. We've discussed the impact he's going to have on guys like Justin Houston and Darius Leonard, but the Colts are just an average to maybe in slightly below average defense, especially the second half of last year. So if you throw DeForest Buckner into the mix with an elite linebacker like Darius Leonard, a young secondary featuring Malik Hooker and Rocky Ascend, takes a little less pressure off of them. What do you think the upside is for this Colts defense next year, especially when you throw in the veterans like a Justin Houston as well?
Yeah, and obviously all those guys staying healthy is a big key, but I think the thing that happens when you add DeForest Buckner to that mix is, like you mentioned, more pressure on the quarterback. The opposing quarterback is the thing you have to stop in the NFL. So you're getting more pressure on the quarterback because DeForest Buckner is a player who on his own can get you 12 sacks in a season and numerous other quarterback hits and quarterback pressures and tipping the ball with his height at the line of scrimmage. And then that helps the other guys get pressure. And then if there's more pressure, that means there's more turnovers on the back end. And I love Hooker's range and his ability to go get the ball. I expect that to spike, and you see him getting a ton of takeaways, and you just reduce how much time the guys on the back end have to cover. And I just think that all those things come together. And when you're running a Tampa 2 style defense, you're right. That pressure from the inside is so key, and getting pressure from everywhere along your front four is important. So everybody else on the back end, those zones close up quicker and they have less time that they have to cover guys. And that's where I think I see and we saw it with the 49ers last year. They set a record for the fewest takeaways on defense in 2018. And that was with DeForest Buckner still getting 12 sacks. And they were like, you know what, this is not going to work because we need pressure from the outside too. So when you get all four of those defensive linemen rushing in unison and putting pressure on the quarterback, you saw the big leap forward the 49ers defense took in 2019. And I think the Colts have that in place and can take a big leap on the back end.
Last question I have for you, Brian. Appreciate the time as always. The character, we mentioned it multiple times in the show, but Chris Bauer and the Colts really have emphasized that ever since he stepped into the building from day one. They're going to build a team full of high character guys. And if you're committing this amount of resources to DeForest Buckner, $21 million annually for the next 4 to 5 years, and you trade a first round pick for him, it seems like he fits every box as far as not only on the field, but off the field in the locker room. And can you speak a little bit more just for the Colts fans out there wondering about what DeForest Buckner is, not only as a player, but as a person? It seemed like if the Colts are this comfortable committing this amount of resources to DeForest Buckner, he is the Colts character guy that they probably always wanted on that defensive side.
Yeah, and I think consistency and being able to – well, one of the things that you see, and players will let you know, in this day and age of social media, there was just an outpouring, and his teammates were like, oh, man, players that will benefit from him leaving because they'll get more playing time. We're like, man, I can't believe Buckner's leaving. I'm going to miss this guy. I'm going to miss this dude. He helped me so much. He taught me so much, and he's still only 25 years old going into his year 26 season. So how much his teammates liked him was key. And I think for a fan and for especially a coach is that you can, I mean, there's been nobody more consistent for the 49ers. I talked about his snap count. It seems like he never has to come off the field. He's consistent day in and day out as a worker. He's consistent in the locker room. He's a really humble guy. He's pretty quiet. He's not like one of those vocal leader, rah-rah types. He just is someone you can count on. He's going to come to work every day. He's going to play hard every down. He's going to be out there when it matters, and you can count on him. He's consistent, I think, is the number one thing I would say about DeForest Buckner.
You guys can follow Brian on Twitter at BDPeacock. He's the host of Locked On 49ers and the Locked On Podcast Network. Appreciate the time as always, man. And who would have thought DeForest Buckner would be on the move and the Colts would be 49ers be making this trade. So appreciate the time.
Yeah, it's wild, man. DeForest Buckner has moved on, and I know it hurts a lot of 49ers fans, but it'll help, especially if the 49ers actually hit on that number 13 overall pick. And yeah, good luck to the Colts. It's going to be a fun team to watch next year for sure.